You're listening to Love and Revolution Radio, covering the heart of change and changes of the heart, featuring stories of ordinary, extraordinary people who are waging struggles for love and revolution.
This week on Love and Revolution Radio, we boldly go into the territory you've all been waiting for, as your Love and Revolution Radio co-hosts weigh in on the presidential elections, women and politics, what real democracy looks like, and how nonviolence can help us use political, social, and economic power to actually rebalance women, men, and the whole darn thing.
Most important thing for me as we dig into this discussion is to really look at the critical relationship between what's been missing in regard to the feminine in our political theory, and note that it goes far deeper than just the subordination of women in politics. Women have more often than not simply demanded a place at the table, and we're talking about the existing patriarchal table, rather than bringing forward more feminine views.
God stood before you with her hands on her hips. She said, I'll accept love and loving words from your lips. She said, everything changes with conviction like this. I need you to be good right now. I need you to be good, good, and how. I need you to be love right now. I need you to be
Hello, this is Sherry Mitchell for Love and Revolution Radio. Kwe Nidups and Nidabesks Guanu. Hello and welcome. I'm coming to you from my home in the Dawnland in the rainy and chilly Bunawabskeg territory, located in and along the shores of the beautiful Penobscot River in central Maine. And as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ms. Rivera Sun. Hello, Rivera.
Greetings, Sherry. You know, we are recording this show on an auspicious day. It is October 2nd at the date of our recording. That's Gandhi's birthday, 1869. Today, we're going to have a conversation between Sherry and I, which we've been longing to have probably for close to 2 years, about the role of women and democracy together. It's a very important time to explore this conversation in a deeper way than most of our media is doing. This is a moment when we have not one, but two candidates running for president of the United States, two women candidates, I should say. And yet the conversation about the role of women in politics, but particularly in relation to democracy, runs far deeper than anything you will see on the mass corporate media in terms of this conversation. Now, a lot of people are starting to maybe take blows at or pick apart the particular candidates running for office, but we would like to go deeper with this conversation. We would actually like to explore a much longer arc of history, and what feminism might mean in terms of this long arc of history and politics, and to remember that politics is really how we organize the business of decision-making as societies collectively. And so when we look at that broad framework, that broad definition, Sherry and I would like to talk a little bit about democracy as something broader and deeper than just the representative republic that we know today in the United States and in many of what's called democracy around the world. Now, I'd also like to comment just briefly so we all remember that we don't actually live in a functional so-called democracy here in the United States. Sherry, as a lawyer, is actually pretty well versed on the Constitution and what it actually is and is not. But in general, most people can agree that we live in a representative republic in which we use a democratic voting process to elect our representatives and our senators and our president. And then we have the checks and balances of the various houses of power. But democracy is much bigger than even just that. Democracy is an idea about how we make decisions together. And democracy, as some of our guests have actually commented on previous shows, is an idea that isn't just limited to what we call politics or governmental structures. It's something that we could be using, although in the United States we do not generally, we could be using within our home and personal lives, our faith communities, our businesses, our educational system, our workplaces, and our nonprofits and service organizations. Not to mention, many of us could be using it and are not, although some of us are, inside our movements for change. Sherry, I'd love to hand that over to you as just a big ball of wax to explore.
Well, it is a big ball of wax. And I think that the most important thing for me as we dig into this discussion is to really look at the critical relationship between what's been missing in regard to the feminine in our political theory. And note that it goes far deeper than just the subordination of women in politics, that's simply an outcropping of the elimination of the aspects of the divine feminine within our social and religious spheres. In fact, in many ways, it's also been absent from the feminist movement, where women have more often than not simply demanded a place at the table. And we're talking about the existing patriarchal table, rather than bringing forward more feminine views, because we've been taught that being feminine is weak. And many people have bought into that lie, and they don't recognize their strength in being creators, sustainers, and protectors of life. And we've seen how that has actually skewered our ideas of democracy, where we're being guided by these false power hierarchies that don't have anything to do with equitable distribution of justice or wealth or a sense of safety or the resources that people need in order to survive across the board, which has been the traditional role of women within our societies, if we go back far enough, has been that equitable distribution, the protection of all life, making sure that everyone has enough. Those types of things have been lost along the way in our drive for this dominator position within the world that actually strips out all of those life-sustaining, life-protecting elements and ideologies. And if we look at the imbalance within our democracy, if we look at the imbalance within our political system that is supposed to be representative of this illusion or this myth of democracy that people are chasing, we can see how that imbalanced view has played out on the world stage, where we're destroying what we need to survive. We're actively engaged in the act of killing for profit, and we are doing very little to sustain, nurture, and protect life. And I'm hoping that we have the opportunity to really start looking at how those things play out in the world today, based on the fact that we have had this void, essentially, that has existed since the elimination of the true feminine power structures being represented within our societies. I would like to look at our current mainstream political theory and look at how it's flourished throughout history based on real masculine ideologies and a masculine sense of power, which is all external. And then look at the way that we might be able to change that political theory moving forward if we start incorporating the more intuitive, life-based, life-honoring energies of the feminine into that structure, and what it might look like and how things may be different and how that might benefit society as a whole by presenting a more balanced, humane, and, as I've said over and over again, life-protecting, life-sustaining, and life-nurturing way of being in the world.
I think before we jump into those two things, what's going on presently and what we can do to change and transform it for a hope of a future, I'm going to give a very brief historical footnote on how we came to be in this situation. And there's a lot of versions of this story. There's a lot of details to this story. But in a very broad sweep of a brush, and I hope our listeners today will forgive me for being broad, but we have a lot to talk about on the show today. In a very broad sweep of a brush, we have to look back through history many thousands of years to look at the shift that archaeologists and scholars and researchers think might have happened. We don't know for sure. Maybe certain researchers have a better idea of this than me, what predated these empires, conquests, societies. But we do know that in Europe, at least, there was a rise of patriarchal dominator culture that really swept across and was really reinforced by violence and conquest, in which by 1500, you have a massive persecution of all things pagan, all things feminine. And you do have in that time period a very clear and pronounced persecution of possibly millions of women and the destruction and the demise of everything feminine within European cultures and the rise of an extreme patriarchy. You also get in this time period the start of the invasion of the North American continent through colonization and many other continents around the world. And the demise and destruction of all things feminine or balanced within the indigenous cultures that were here on this North American continent. So I just wanted to offer that just so that we have a framework of thinking as we proceed in this conversation that the legacy that we're dealing with is very old, it's very culturally ingrained, and that in some ways we could view that we have made small steps of progress from the worst or the bottom of that pit. But we have to have an idea of how far this journey has been and how far it may have to go. Now, it may not take us a lot of time to do that. My hope is that with all the skills of active nonviolence, change and transformation, the solidarity between people that's growing, increased respect for many traditions and many cultures, we can make this transition much more rapidly and much more positively than the way we got into this mess. But if we're going to think about the work that needs to be done, we need to think about the journey that we've been on. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to you, Sherry, to describe some of what's currently playing out in our politics and societies. And then we can jump into what needs to be done.
Well, what's playing out right now in our politics is very interesting. We have two women candidates running for president, and we see these two women being pitted against each other based on the current ideology and based on this cognitive dissonance with facing the reality that we are currently facing in the world today. And the fact of the matter is that the world needs women in democracy in order to be truly democratic. And women need democracy if they're going to change the system and laws that preclude them and preclude societies as a whole from attaining equality. The elimination of those women's voices has played a significant role in that preclusion. And women need to play a significant role in the process so that we can have an equal and fair political process. We need more than just women in politics. We actually need an equal and fair political process where a woman's voice can be heard and laws that can accommodate her interests can come into the forefront. We need active participation and equality to allow women to influence decision-making initiatives, because historically we found that those are the foundations of the development of peace and true democracy in societies where women have come to the forefront, not only as leaders and as power brokers, but women who truly bring forward these ideals that are steeped in divine feminine wisdom. And so if we're going to look at what's going on currently, we have to recognize these two dynamics that are at play, where we have a woman who is coming solely from the position of patriarchy, who is really a power broker within the patriarchy, and that's viewed as her strength. And then we have another woman who is really speaking out on behalf of life, who started out her professional career delivering babies and bringing life into this world and is now standing up politically
for the nurturing and sustaining of that life. And the difference between the two is stark. And we see which one's being rejected and shunned by the mainstream media and which one is being promoted and glorified by the majority of people in the political process, because it's comfortable, it's familiar, it's what we've come to expect. And when we start thinking about the differences between these two women and what they stand for and where they're coming from, we don't need to villainize one or the other. We just need to recognize the distinction that one was taught to believe that their power was seated within the patriarchy, and in order to gain power, they had to become part of the patriarchy. The other recognized that their power was not seated in the patriarchy, that their power was seated in their ability to create, nurture, and sustain life, and are now standing for that power. They both have separate ideas of what power means, and they're both bringing those different perspectives of what power means to play in the work that they're doing out in the world. And I think that this is a real critical time for society, and it's certainly a critical time for women. Do we want to move forward in a way that promotes the actions of the patriarchy, which have been destroying life on this planet? Now they're destroying the planet to a degree that is putting all life at risk. Or do we want to move forward in a way that changes that dynamic and begins once again putting life as a central value structure to our decision making? Do we want to be making decisions going forward that protect and sustain life? Or do we want to be making decisions going forward to those things that we know have destroyed life? And this is the base question that we all have to ask ourselves. And the trick here is to become immersed in this system, what we call the dance of the cannibal giant from our traditional mythology, where we become so immersed in the system that we believe all of the fear-mongering that is really just a tool of manipulation to get us to move in the direction that they want us to go in. Well, we have to be very, very afraid of what could possibly happen here if you don't go along with the march of patriarchy, with this elevation of false power. So we've been well-trained and well-conditioned to be obedient to the march of this machine. And people are still being divided into these very distinct camps where people are being prevented from really stepping back and taking pause and saying, okay, what is it that I want to stand for going forward? We have to really be willing to be courageous, because the status quo has eliminated that intuitive heart-based wisdom and, in fact, ridicules it and shames it when it comes up in the public sphere. So we need to be courageous enough to face that ridicule and the shaming that goes along with it, and to promote this perspective, this way of being, this balancing of the intellect that is driving our societies. We also have to recognize that we are actively being dissuaded from doing so. In fact, I had to chuckle, because as we're having this discussion on the right-hand side of my Skype window, all of a sudden an advertisement popped up about educating girls and Girls Rising. So someone is listening to our conversation and deciding what it is that we need to promote in the world, which is educating young women to be part of the current system. And when we look at that, when we look at most of the work being done for women's equality, it's aimed at placing women within the existing paradigm, when what we really need is for women's wisdom to be fully utilized and activated in order for us to create a new paradigm, to move forward in a way that creates more equality, equanimity, justice, more balance, more humanity, more life nurturing, protecting, and sustaining focus. And so when we get into these kinds of conversations, it's difficult to move beyond the idea that true power for women is connected to their ability to place themselves within leadership positions within the current structure,
when what we really need to be discussing is something far deeper than that. It's about the reemergence, the re-energizing, and the reintroduction of real intuitive heart-based wisdom into all of our discussions.
I think that's absolutely spot on. And one of my intentions with today's show was to actually live up to the title of this show, Love and Revolution, that what we're really getting at here is a very revolutionary idea, that this is far beyond the scope of who you're going to vote for president. The way that our presidential races are currently structured is kind of like a Miss America contest if we women enter into it. This is not, for me, what real feminism is about. That when we really look at this very, very deeply, we look at the history, we look at the very depth of understanding that Sherry, you're bringing up in the show, we're really trying to say that we live among structures and systems that are the legacy of these thousands of years of patriarchy. And we have to remember, to all of us, as we're speaking the word patriarchy or we're saying the word feminine, that patriarchy is not masculinity. It's very different. It's the warped distortion of the masculine energy into a dominator system, a dominator structure. And that is something that all of us, whether we're men, women, transgender, queer, still questioning, all of that, we all have a responsibility to not try to succeed in those structures, but rather try to succeed together in unraveling those structures and reweaving structures and systems within our whole society that honor one another and respect life and engage everyone in shared decision-making. This is a revolutionary task in our world, and we should be aware of that. I think that also we should remember that as Sherry is talking about these life-nurturing and sustaining values, that this goes for men too. That men as well as women in our culture, the dominant culture of, say, the United States, if not much of the world, is sucking the feminine and has been sucking and suppressing the feminine out of the world. And if you're embodied in a male body, this is true for you too, that this feminine, what we're talking about is feminine energy, of which everyone has a part. It's part of being a balanced human being in the world, just as many people embodied in women's body have a dose of the masculine energy as well. That we're way out of balance, way out of whack, and we have seen where this has led us. We are destroying our own environment. We're at the cliff edge of extinction. We're about as extreme as you can get in this direction. And to rebalance, we is going to take not just voting for a woman president in a patriarchal structure of domination. It's going to take working on the ground in our communities, in our workplaces, in our faith centers, in our educational system to, like I said, deconstruct the old systems and reconstruct new values and new systems. And it goes deep. Because we need to look at our own minds and our own hearts as well, because all of this replicates and is within us inside. So we have to do the work in ourselves, we have to do the work in our communities, and in every level of organization that we relate to as human beings. I myself am very excited for this task. This goes way beyond November. It's important, as we're leading up into the November elections, to remember that that's a brief snapshot, that this election is one action that we are being asked to do within thousands of actions, millions of actions that we're being asked to do in our everyday lives. And for me, that's my question for everyone, not who are you voting for in November, but what are you doing today and tomorrow and next week and next month and this whole year to build real rebalancing in our society and to really challenge and confront and transform this toxic legacy that we've inherited that is present in all aspects of our lives. And I would say the first thing that I do is really reflect deeply on that. I worked with youth last weekend in the high school, and you know, we were really talking about why is it that we have educational systems that are completely structured around youth and children sitting down and listening for 8 hours a day? Why don't we have engaged participation? Why do we put people in a classroom to learn about the world? Why don't we use the world as the classroom? These kind of questions on every aspect of our lives is really about this revolutionary change that we not only think we need, we desperately need if we are to survive and transform in our world.
I think that's exactly right. There's so much more to this discussion than just simply looking at the impacts of the current election, though it's got people in an uproar. People are afraid. People are voting out of fear. People are being shamed into voting out of fear. People are being ridiculed for refusing to vote out of fear. I mean, it's just an absurd reflection of this larger system that polices people into maintaining the status quo. And we have to be willing to look at how that happens. How does that policing occur within our society, where we have citizen soldiers on the street who are perpetuating the pop culture by shaming and ridiculing and ostracizing those who do not go along with the status quo? That's very much a part of this process as well. And so when we're thinking about democracy, it's as much about citizenship rights, participation, and inclusion as it is about political parties, elections, and checks and balances. And the equality of democracy is determined not only by the form of institutions, but also by the extent that different groups within the society are allowed to participate in those institutions and are able to bring forward their authentic voices to the discussions that are being had and to the decisions that are being made. Many of the groups that have been marginalized are those that do not fit within the current popular paradigm. All those who speak out for an authentic form of equality are targeted. So what we're dealing with when we're looking at this is a broad-scale protection of this imbalanced power structure that has been pushing forward for centuries. So we have to think about not only what are we voting for in this election, but what are we voting for with the way that we live our lives? What do we stand for? What do we support? What do we sanction with our silence when we continue to allow this unchecked system of violence and destruction to push forward, this imbalanced dominator matrix to exist without any type of balancing factors being added to the equation? Then we are actually sanctioning the death and destruction of people around the world. I just saw a report that more than 100 children have been killed in the last week in Syria. Children. Okay, these are not soldiers. These are children. These are our future. And we're allowing these children to be killed with our silence because we're not doing what we need to do to stand up for the protection of life. We're not honoring the right of others to live in the same way that we hope to be honored ourselves. We're not standing for the protection of other people's safety the way that we would hope our own safety would be protected. And that's part of that missing equation. That's the separation of these two powers that we're talking about, the masculine and the feminine. And as you said, the patriarchy is driven by these aspects of the masculine that have not been tempered by the balancing of the feminine. And so when we think about how we need to move forward, how do we need to address these issues within our society, it really is about not only putting women in positions of power, as I stated before, but also putting individuals, whether they be man or woman, in positions of power who are willing to speak the truth authentically of the divine feminine, who are able to bring forward that life protective testament to the larger population, who are willing to stand unwaveringly in the face of all of the shame and the ridicule and the targeting that they'll be subjected to by the mass status quo protecting society, and to be able to be clear and to be able to be honest and to be able to truly embody what it is that we're talking about. And I think that one of the things that I stated earlier that feeds this is the manufacturing of fear, that we are embedded into a system where we are being manipulated all the time. We're being manipulated by the polarization and these fear-making mechanisms that the media promotes on a daily basis.
And we'll be back after a quick break for a station ID.
We know the sweet world is not going to end, because it's always returning to beginning again. And tomorrow is one great mystery, my friend. So let it be good right now. Let it be good, good, and how. Let it be love.
We have to be willing to be courageous enough to look beyond the veil. You know, who is the man behind the curtain who's pulling the strings? And to recognize how the pulling of those strings is impacting our complicity with this system. How is it that this manipulation of our hearts and minds, this manipulation of fear, is driving our decision making and causing us to participate in a system that has no respect or honor for life in any form? And how do we disengage from that and start re-educating ourselves and our children and those around us to start moving in a direction that does actually respect and honor life? And that's what it really comes down to for me when we're having these discussions, because that's the aspect that has been so clearly missing from our democracy, from our political systems, from our corporate structures, and from nearly all aspects of our societies for far too long. And the result of that is death. It's death to human beings. It's death to our environment. And now the threat is so great that it could mean the destruction of all life on this planet. And so how do we move forward in ways? What are some of the things that we can do in order to reinstitute this, to re-educate people, and to bring this hidden truth that lives within all of us, men and women alike? How do we bring that hidden truth out and give it voice and then embody it in the work that we're doing out in the world?
Well, I think one of the answers, because there's many answers to that question, Sherry, lies in what we love to talk about here on Love and Revolution Radio, which is how to make change through nonviolence and nonviolent action. When we get on air, we start to say these things, when we write, every now and then we'll get a comment back, like Rivera Sun for president, or Sherry Mitchell for president, or, you know, some other political office. But what people don't realize is that you and I are sitting in political office, but our office is shared leadership and shared participation within the movement of movements, within nonviolence, within change and transformation. That we, I could speak for myself in this, but I think you might agree that we have a political affiliation, and that is with the grassroots movements for change. And even within that context, our listeners here on Love and the Revolution Radio have heard us over and over again being these courageous voices that speak up for the need to face ridicule and rebalance the masculine and feminine energies within our movements. That we speak about the need to stop thinking in terms of conquest mentalities and overthrow. That we're going to use nonviolent action to overthrow ideologies and systems and structures that we don't like. Instead, we tell our listeners, we tell ourselves, we unwire our own brains and rewire it to think about change as a transformative process that we all are doing together. Us, our opposition, the bystanders, that this kind of making change through deep, centered nonviolence is about a collective process that we undergo together. And that is, in a nutshell, the very change we're looking for in every system and structure that we face. Now, I think when we think about nonviolence and a culture of active nonviolence, one thing that I'm really looking to see rise up in the United States, it's rising in the world, is the presence of a skilled, wise, strategic, heart-based, intuitive, widespread participation in movements from my populace, my fellow Americans, as a political force within our our broader social, political, economic sphere. That I think we can do this, and I think it's absolutely necessary and needed. So the next time we find ourselves, and I know I'm going to practice this, freaking out over the upcoming elections, or arguing with someone about the upcoming elections, or getting in a morass of despair over the upcoming elections, to maybe stop halfway through that process and take half of that time that we might have spent in that pattern and redirect our energy into these movements for change, to vitalize and to invigorate the presence of this very powerful and profound shift in change and transformation. There's a catch to nonviolence that is noted. Erica Chenoweth and Maria Stephan actually have empirically and statistically analyzed this in their work with Why Civil Resistance Works, that nonviolence and nonviolent action becomes a democratizing force whenever it is used. So whether you're working on getting restorative justice into your school system or your justice department, or you're working on stopping police brutality, or you're working on getting money out of politics, every time we use nonviolent action, even if we fail to succeed in our stated goals, the effect upon the populace and the society is a democratizing force, which is to say that power starts to disperse throughout the society into an empowered, embodied, and shared capacity to make change and decisions together. I think that's almost downright magical, if you ask me. I think it's very encouraging. But in order for us to see this transformative power at work in the world, we actually have to engage in it. And I think that's one of the elements of this change and transformation, is that we have to become skilled and versed at using deeply principled, very wise, strategic, and heart-based nonviolence in making change in our world.
Yeah, I think it's really important to think about the fact that, you know, in the United States and European countries, such as Britain, which is these models, as we know, have been exported out around the world. When we think about democracy, democratic rights were initially enjoyed exclusively by property-owning white males of status, and only extended to women and the rest of the male population much later. And so in other parts of the world, where we look at what's unfolded, what's transpired, what's evolved, we recognize that the expansion of women's rights within the society, the emergence of more women's voices, has gone hand in hand with the establishment of democracy. And many women have played a key role in the transition from authoritarianism, which is the dominator matrix that we're talking about, to democracy, or some form of leadership that's moving in the direction of democracy. I don't know that we've ever seen true democracy. So when we look at these examples around the world, we see that women are principal agents of democratization and cultural change. And so that, you know, these two movements have kind of emerged more or less in tandem, which is, in my mind, really a reflection of the evolution of our consciousness. And what we're talking about here today is a further evolution of that consciousness, recognizing that separating the two, women's voices from ideas of democracy and from forward movement, separating the two is not only conceptually muddled and politically dangerous, but it is trying to solve a problem with the very things that created the problem in the first place. And so we have to be willing to look at the examples that history has provided for us. When we focus more on the number of women in power than on the type of power being negotiated, we unwittingly separate those two things. And so when we look at movements such as the suffragist movement, which was principally nonviolent, of course, the women did experience a considerable amount of violence that was aimed at them. There were some individuals within the movement who engaged in some destructive behavior, but largely that movement was nonviolent. And it was able to succeed because of its nonviolent nature. because the power structure is so well developed that it can squash anything that tries to come at it from a position of violence, because violence is solely and exclusively within its wheelhouse. They have the corner market on violence. And so they know how to use violence to exert control over others. What they don't know how to negotiate is interactions with peaceful, nonviolent individuals. They're attempting to use violence, but every attempt that they make to use violence only creates more individuals willing to stand up in a nonviolent way. And so when you're talking about dispersion of power, one of the things that came up for me is something that I've talked about on the show previously, which is our system of governance that we had here in the Eastern Woodlands areas with the tribes here, the Iroquois Confederacy and the Wabanaki Confederacy, which is the confederation of tribes that my community belongs to, my tribal nation belongs to. And with the clan mother system, the chiefs and the warriors would bring their problems to the clan mothers, who would sit and deliberate on those things and discuss and go into ceremony and wait until they had or they could see a clear path forward that was the path that was the most life-sustaining, recognizing that if you harm someone else's children, they're going to want to harm your children. What are we seeing right now? What I just talked about earlier, 100 Syrian children have been killed. And so when you recognize that your actions have a direct correlation on you and on your family and your children and grandchildren going into the future, then you choose to make decisions that are going to protect and promote their lives forward. And we're not seeing that type of decision-making happening right now. And so under the clan system, the clan mothers would deliberate until they came up with a plan that was most likely to protect and to perpetuate life going forward, recognizing how their actions had a corresponding reaction, causes and effects, and all of those things, and how it unfolded into what we're seeing today, which is an unending cycle of perpetuating violence that we're continuously feeding with this war machine that we have engaged and put into motion. And the only way for us to change that is to change the nature of that movement and to recognize that violence only begets more violence. And when we're talking about bringing in the feminine, when we're talking about women in democracy, what we really should have called the show was the divine feminine in democracy, because what we're talking about is not gender specific. It's an energy that we both carry. We all carry the masculine and feminine within us. And ideally, we use both aspects of those things to intuit the proper path forward and then to execute that plan out into the world. That's a harmonious working of the masculine and feminine. When we used intuitive heart-based wisdom to make our decisions based on the feminine energies, then we take that heart-based intuitive wisdom and we execute it out into the world, the practical, that is the masculine energy. And ideally, we all have both of those energies working in perfect harmony and concert with one another within us. And what we would hope to be able to do going forward is to bring forth more leaders, male or female, who are willing to stand for and to execute that balanced point of view moving forward, to bring that heart-based intuitive wisdom to the forefront and to implement plans that move that forward out into the world of form. That's what we need right now. Critically, that's what we need right now.
I couldn't agree more, Sherry. And it is a kind of funny hat trick that we played on our listeners to talk about women and democracy and then actually have broaden that understanding into the divine feminine. I think that when you mentioned the suffrage movement, particularly here in the United States, one of the things that we can learn from the suffrage movement, both its success and its shortcomings, is that it's important to have goals that match our principles. At that time, women believed in a theory of change that if they got a seat at the table, that would be enough to change and transform the whole table. And I think we can reflect pretty deeply all these years later that perhaps that was not the only way or even the best way to go about that needed change and transformation. That at this time in 2016, what many, many voices are saying is that we don't need to use the theory of change of electoral politics that says get people in power and then change will happen, but rather to say activate people power in everyone and then change may happen. And people power or nonviolent action is really rooted in understanding what I consider to be the very basic nature of the universe and how the world works, which is about participation in systems. Where we place our participation, a system flourishes. Where we withdraw or non-cooperate with a system, it diminishes. And so within nonviolent action or movement building, we like to really reflect that we non-cooperate with injustice and we cooperate with justice, and that these are the two hands of nonviolence, that we have to use both. We have to build the new systems we want, and we have to withdraw actively, and that's not always easy, from the systems we don't like. In the act of withdrawing from these systems, we often have to intervene in them and stand up nonviolently, using, you know, what Sherry has often you've talked about as one of the definitions of warrior in your culture, just enough force to hold back the destruction, but not to cause further harm. And so I think it's important to reflect that at this point in time, we don't have to fall again for the trick or the trap of giving away our power over and over and over again, but rather to take back our power by embodying our own choices, embodying this understanding of how the world works, and make sure that we ourselves are not waiting for someone else in power to start making the change that we need, so we know we need. To not put our power or our expectations into the hands of someone else, but to look very deeply and to see how we and our friends and neighbors can work together to actually pick up the threads of that fabric of change that we need to reweave and start to do that work today. For me, that's an embodied humanity for both men and women, a process of rebalancing ourselves and understanding power, politics, democracy, change-making, movement-building, all together in a way that is honoring and respecting of ourselves, our friends and neighbors, and also the rest of this beautiful earth that we know at this point in time, in 2016, cannot be ignored, that we can't just have a democracy among human beings without a democracy and a respect for the rest of the natural systems, that our whole beings were created in concert, in cooperation and collaboration with all of these natural systems, the forests, the rivers, the oceans, the air, the other animals. Evolution is a story of democratic participation in co-creating together. And if we're going to move forward from this point, if we're going to have a future on this planet, our ideas of democratic participation and co-creation have to extend not just to our human family, but to our entire Earth. Now, how's that for a revolutionary idea? That's so far beyond the scope of the November elections as to just make our minds explode into a million pieces. But I think we know, deep in our hearts, we know that this is the direction we have to move in. We have to find our way back home to being part of this whole world.
I think that what you have just said, Rivera, is, you know, so meaningful, and it's so important for people to really take it in, to not just allow it to skim across the surface of their hearing, but to really take that in deeply. And we don't just need to be talking to a certain subset of the population who is willing to open their heart to the full love-based revolution that we're talking about, because it's also in the best interest of intellectuals and all activists working for political reform to understand the interconnections among true women's voices that embody, and we're talking about women's voices that embody divine wisdom. There's an interconnection between them and political rights and democracy. And to acknowledge We need everyone to acknowledge that a democratic system without a true woman's voice, without human rights, without gender equality, without racial equality, without income equality, is an inferior form of democracy. Gender inequality and all of the other gender arguments that society's having right now is simply a reflection of the imbalance that we've been discussing that goes back thousands of years. And it's simply a manifestation of the ongoing argument over the power between the masculine and the feminine. Prior to this patriarchal era, we had a matriarchal era, which was equally as imbalanced. And it's now time for us to evolve into a place where we're seeing a true marriage of the divine masculine and feminine within us all and manifested out into the society. That's the only way that we're going to be able to move forward in a way that honors, protects, and sustains life going forward. It's the only way that we're going to create harmony, equality, and justice within our systems moving forward. And I think that everyone is starting to become aware of that, and that now it's up to all of us to be able to embody that in all of the work that we're doing and to make sure that it gets made manifest into form out in the world that we're all living in.
Well, Sherry, as we're talking today on Love and Revolution Radio, I think we've actually opened another depth of the ongoing conversation that we're always exploring together. And that it reminds me that, as you said, this is a conversation that we need to be opening within our communities and within our families, and not just with the people we think are going to agree with us. That's important. It's important to create what the Buddhists call Sangha, so that you can explore these ideas within people who are supportive and affirmative for the development and growth of articulation and thought and understanding. But it's also important that we start to find ways to open these conversations with people who may not have ever heard these ideas before, or maybe a little resistant to them, may have quite a bit of belief systems and patterns that very much align them with what has been in the world for many thousands of years. And I think that work of opening those conversations, introducing these ideas, is a part of this change and transformation that we know we need so greatly. That you mentioned earlier in the show, Sherry, the idea that where are we being silent? Where is our silence reinforcing the ongoing churning of this machine of dominator systems? And that it, at the very least, if we're going to slow the cogs in the wheels and even dismantle them and rebuild them into something else, then the first thing we need to do is check in with ourselves, start to consider what our minds are thinking about, what our hearts are saying, rewire and repattern if we find something that we think should not be perpetuating within us. And then we need to lift our voices and have conversations, not shouting matches, not arguments, because that's also part of the dominator system, but conversations with one another where we really very deeply listen to someone on the other side of this conversation, where we also find ways to speak our truth even if our voice shakes. That this is very much a part of the work that is in front of us. What do you think about that, Sherry?
What I think is that if we look around the world at what's going on, we're seeing very, very clearly where the heart of this struggle is being reflected out in the world. And it begins with a place of birth, within the birthing waters, that we have seen that this challenge, this struggle that we're facing to balance these power structures within our minds, within our hearts, is being reflected out into the world in the very place where life is created, within the water. And then if we want to know where to begin our reflection about what this means out in the world, how it's a reflection of what's going on within us, then we go back to that place within our own womb, and we think about the protective waters, the birthing waters, and we look out into the world at what's being birthed around the waters. We're seeing people standing up for life all around the world, connected to the waters. That's a birthing of a new way of being. And that's where we need to start focusing our attention on what new way of being in the world are we birthing? And how is that connected to the water, which is the very source of our life here on this planet?
So beautiful to hear you say that, Sherry, since in The Dandelion Insurrection, the novel that I wrote about nonviolent change in the United States, the metaphor that we use for the change makers is not just mothers, not this concept of a mother of a nation, which is actually very much a twist on the patriarchal father of the nation concept, but rather midwives of change, those of us who care and nurture and step forward to help this change come into the world, and that we reach into the void of the unknown, the void of what we can only sense or guess at, that we have to use our intuition to reach into and help bring forward the birth and this new creation that actually takes us all to create together. It's a beautiful metaphor, it's a beautiful vision, and it's a real honor, Sherry, to have spent this time with you today and with our listeners, bringing forth this vision and this conversation and this doing this work, because this is not a metaphor. We use the metaphor of midwifing, but the actual process that we've been engaged in today is embodied and real and literal. We're doing the work. We're reaching into what's unknown for many in our culture and bringing it forth into the world. So thank you, Sherry. It's an honor.
Always an honor to be able to spend this hour with you, Rivera, each week, and to share with our listeners the reflections that we see through our own journey and through our journey that is shared with all others on this beautiful planet that we call home, our Mother Earth.
I need you to be love, 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 love and revolution. Love, love, love and revolution.
Thanks this week to my ever insightful, ever inspiring co-host, Ms. Rivera Sun, for engaging in this really thoughtful and thought-provoking conversation this week. Our theme song, Love and Revolution, with words and music by Diane Patterson, is also performed by Diane Patterson and Spirit Radio. You can find more of her great music at www.dianepatterson.org.
And thank you to you, Sherry, for being my soul sister in the world. It's so transformative every week and every time we have a conversation. For all of our listeners out there who want another dose of Sherry's wisdom and insights, I recommend going and checking out her Sacred Instructions Facebook page. You can find that link on our Love and Revolution page on my website, www.riverasun.com. You can also look it up right on Facebook at Sacred Instructions. Love and Revolution Radio is a weekly radio program, and many local radio stations throughout the country are starting to pick it up and carry it. If you'd like to tune your dial to your local radio station and hear us, it's really easy. Just go and ask your station manager to carry the show. You can reach us via my website, which you've heard, www.riverasun.com. And for all of your friends who love podcasts, we are Love and Revolution Radio on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podomatic.
For Love and Revolution Radio, I'm Sherry Mitchell. This week, Rivera and I dove into the issue and the subject matter related to women and democracy. What we were really trying to do is to get people to think about what are the correlations between women and democracy on a much deeper level than simply looking at the number of women in power, but looking at where there is an absence of the woman's voice. Where is there an absence of life-sustaining, life-protecting, life-nurturing wisdom being infused into the conversation? And perhaps, listeners, you'll take some time to think about where that absence might be present in your own lives and how you can shift that conversation within yourself and then embody that shift out into the world by the time we talk to you next week.
What if you knew?